Thanks for listening this afternoon on Thursday, July 26, 2012, on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Thursday in the 3 o'clock hour is Industry Chatter, and my guest on the program today is Larry Besterman, President and Chief Executive Officer of TWD & Associates. Larry, it's great to see you. Thanks for coming in today.
Thanks for having me.
Happy to do it. Tell me what TWD & Associates does for your clients in government, please.
We are a systems integrator. We're focused on the public sector, mostly the federal government, but a little bit of state and local work. We do communications and collaboration solutions for our customers. We focus on voice, video, and data systems, the infrastructure, all the boxes that make it work down to the desktop level. We design, build, implement, and maintain systems. So depending on the customer will and their requirements will depend on the kind of work that we do.
When you work with state and local governments in this present time that we live in, I imagine you're seeing in the federal government what you probably saw at the state and local level, at least financially, 2 years ago, 3 years ago, is that fair to say?
Yeah, in fact, a number of the projects, we had three different projects at the state and local level. All of them ended short because of lack of funding. Mm-hmm. So, and we haven't had additional work since then. So, they're feeling it.
I imagine there's a level of experience and comfort, though, that you can give a client in the federal government who may be looking at the same kind of thing either because of just an outright budget change or continuing resolution where there's a lot of uncertainty, that kind of thing. Are there parallels there?
There's funding challenges or funding challenges at any level. And, you know, what you have to be, the approach you have to take, and I think most contractors do, is you have to be a partner. And you have to work with your customers to figure out how they're going to implement funding reductions and what they're going to do differently and how can you help them save the money that they have to save.
Mm-hmm. The work that you do for your federal customers right now, what are they coming to you and asking you about? What are the questions? What are the trends that you see, that kind of thing?
Of course, a lot of people are talking about cloud computing and how all that relates to them, and they're dealing with mandates from above about that. But they're looking at a lot of different things that that will help them save money and do more with less, as they have to do. So based on our skills and the things that we've done for the last 20 years for our customers, we're seeing a lot of interest in collapsing their voice and video infrastructure onto their IP networks so that they have truly a more converged infrastructure.
So tell me what that means in end user speak when you talk about that convergence. What is the person who's using the whatever it is see or not see based on how you do it? What's happening differently behind the scenes?
Historically, your voice and your video systems ran on separate networks. Your video systems would run typically on ISDN or a private line circuit, and your voice systems would have their own networks, all of that separate from your basic data network, your IP-based network. And with how technology has evolved, there's been many years talking about true convergence, and we're actually at the point now where we can do it, mm-hmm. and the technology has matured to the point where there's a lot of interest in that, and we're seeing a lot of customers write requirements and new solicitations oriented towards doing just that, collapsing those voice and video systems into their IP networks. Now, from the user perspective, it really should be transparent. They should be able to pick up their phone and get dial tone and go to voicemail and all those things. The difference is now they might be doing that over an IP system on the same traffic as their data flowing through the same network. And that's what's different than before.
And so the end user can't tell the difference.
Yes, ideally. And if done well and correctly and you add the right applications, you should be able to offer more integrated applications. So, for example, speech to text and text to speech, where You can have an email flow into your voicemail box and vice versa become possible in a more unified communication environment.
How is the translation nowadays? The last time I looked at anything like that, it was some pretty basic stuff, and the conversion was not as good as it could be.
Yeah, I think it's improving. I think first generation products were not as good, and they're better now, and I'm sure they'll keep evolving and getting better.
What are some of the most common applications for those kinds of things? What do people really use them for?
You have a lot of different collaboration tools that are becoming more common. Video chat, instant messaging, those obviously grew up in the outside world, the social media world, but they're being applied into business networks now and business applications.
That's really a dramatically different way of driving the market, isn't it? I mean, historically, it's been government decides to adapt a technology and then goes out and adapts the technology. The idea that the people are coming in and saying, hey, I'm doing this at home, and here's a reason why it would help me to do it here. That's pretty new, I imagine.
I think it is really new, and I think what's interesting about it is I think it's generationally driven. So you have young people coming into the workforce, and they've grown up with these things, and they just sort of expect that it's there, and they're kind of like, I don't understand why it's not. So I think employers, including the government, are adding those capabilities because they're seeing that form of collaboration is effective.
My son has an iPhone. He's 12, and he can't understand why you would not FaceTime somebody if you're able to FaceTime somebody. And if you're not able to, well, what's wrong with them because I can do this? It's that same mindset, I think.
It is. And it's a challenge, I think, for employers, including the government, to how do we adapt what we do and how we do it to engage younger workers and keep them productive and wanting to continue in this line of business, because if they see options in other places, they're going to want to go off and do those things if you don't provide those capabilities.
I know every agency is different, but overall, if you were going to just look across the agencies that you work with, are they doing a pretty good job, do you think, of adapting to various technologies, even if they can't go out and acquire every single individual one? Are the agencies at least trying to adapt as best they can given the budget constraints they have, do you think?
Yes, I think they are. And security, of course, everybody talks about that is one of the large issues. And I think what we're seeing is the security issues are being addressed and being handled one by one. And you're seeing some of these kinds of applications and bring your own device types of environments going through the certification and accreditation process. So I think the government is getting there. And I think the agencies where we see it being adopted and adapted, they're making reasonably good progress.
And BYOD is another manifestation of that phenomenon that we're talking about.
Absolutely.
What are some of the things that agencies are struggling with in this technology adoption, do you think?
I think quality of service is something that they have to wrestle with. They have to make sure their basic core IP infrastructure has quality of service built in a way that will protect the basic data requirement, because it's easy for video applications particularly to be bandwidth hogs and could crowd out other applications, other data applications. So you have to make sure that the quality of service is there such that your infrastructure can support doing all these things on your single network.
Now, you allude to capacity there as far as the network goes, and essentially, are we ready for this? It sounds like
right.
The question that you're posing there. What about security and what about stability? Are those other components that are as important, or are the networks in many cases sufficient when it comes to those issues?
I think each customer has to look at their baseline network and understand that they have to do a baseline assessment of their readiness to go to this kind of converged environment. And we're seeing customers take it incrementally in steps. So they'll do, in fact, a project we've recently been involved with has done just that. We started with a core network switch upgrade, and now that that's completed, we're implementing video over IP and integrating existing voice over IP that was on a separate network, and then we'll be able to add things like IPVTC and digital signage and other advanced multimedia applications. But the first step was that core switch upgrade to provide security and stability, reliability, capacity, all of those things.
I hear that a lot from vendors too, Larry, that it's really helpful not just for the agency but also for the vendor as far as being able to serve the customer to take agencies through kind of this step by step by step instead of coming in and going, here's everything that you can possibly do that is really cool and beneficial to meeting your mission, and here's a plan to execute it all at once. That has a lot of agencies kind of on their heels a little bit.
Yeah, I think we find that our customers are mature and sophisticated buyers of technology. And they understand that it can't all be done at once like that, that there's huge risk associated with doing that. And they're in positions where they can't take on that kind of risk, and it's not prudent to. So taking that incremental approach, you know, look at my core infrastructure first, and what's the first application I put on the new infrastructure, and then what's the second, I think that's the right way to do it.
Let's talk about prioritizing those things in that way when we come back from the break, if you don't mind. Larry Besterman of TWD and Associates, my guest on Industry Chatter on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. We'll continue our conversation in a moment.
To win and deliver government healthcare contracts successfully, you need to align with the right teaming partners. Moreover, with over 900 healthcare IT initiatives proposed in the 2013 federal budget, you need to begin building your healthcare IT teams now. Meet Tech Systems. Every year, Tech Systems deploys thousands of IT professionals at over 5,500 client sites nationwide, including more than 65 government agencies. Tech Systems Government Services offers a dedicated healthcare division to deliver practical healthcare IT solutions to the federal, state, and local government. No matter where you are on your meaningful use journey, Tech Systems can guide you through the transition. From providing managed services that tailor end-user training by role and workflow, to providing BI solutions that get you closer to your quality care goals, Tech Systems, our people make IT possible. Learn more at TechSystems.com, TekSystems.com.
By combining HP 3PAR utility storage with HP ProLiant Gen 8 servers powered by the latest Intel Xeon processors, you can lower your total cost of ownership and improve project ROI. GovConnection, a federal elite HP partner, can show you how HP can power your data center into the future. Call GovConnection's experienced federal team, where service and commitment to the customer are priority one. Call 800-800-0019 today.
Congratulations on landing the job. I'm really excited for you.
Thanks. How's your search going?
Job market's tight. I mean, I can barely get an interview.
Yeah.
And I've got student loans to deal with. You're lucky, you know. The National Guard paid your loans off.
Luck? The Guard was a smart decision, one you can still make.
The National Guard Student Loan Repayment Program can pay up to $50,000 of your existing student loans. Get the details at NationalGuard.com.
Sponsored by the D.C. National Guard, aired by the Maryland, D.C. Delaware Broadcasters Association and this station.
Life's big decisions require some research. You get comparison reports before you buy a car. You hire an inspector when buying a house. You might even look up someone online before a date. But when you go to pick your primary care physician, sometimes you only get a name and number. That hardly seems fair. After all, the only person who has more influence on your health is you. It's different at Kaiser Permanente. All our doctors are listed online with information that paints a picture of who they are, so you know you're picking a doctor who is right for you, right for your family, and someone you can email. Oh, here's one for Dr. Amy Benoulis, who went to Northwestern. Dr. Lindsay Strickland is interested in chronic disease management and is accepting new patients. Bingo! Become a member, and no matter whom you choose, you get a true advocate for your health. So log on to kp.org/doctor and check us out. It could be the beginning of a healthy relationship. Kaiser Permanente. Thrive.
Kaiser Foundation Health Plan of the Mid-Atlantic States Incorporated. 2101 East Jefferson Street, Rockville, Maryland, 20852.
The feds admit they've used the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act to spy on law-abiding Americans. I'm Emily Kopp. On Friday's Federal Drive, we'll talk with former Bush advisor Ken Weinstein about FISA. And Treasury CFO Nanny Coloretti explains how she's crunching numbers in an era of uncertainty. Lots more, too, starting at 6 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. And for all the latest federal news, check out federalnewsradio.com.
Welcome back to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. The president and CEO of TWD and Associates, Larry Besterman's my guest. Larry, the priorities that agencies go through when they're trying to decide how to move some of these things that we talk about and that you serve them for. When I'm sitting down in the very beginnings of the process and I'm trying to figure out whether it's a transition to the cloud or whether I'm transitioning, doing a convergence, as you talked about, with voice and video and so on, what do those steps look like? And if somebody's starting from scratch and asking you to help them go through that process in addition to performing the work, what are the recommendations that you make about the evaluation process? Where should we start? What should be step one? And what should we hold off on and do later?
I think it starts with that baseline assessment of what you have now and how much you have of what you have now. You're going to have different amounts of video capabilities. You're going to have different numbers of users and different agencies and how you're delivering your voice services now as opposed to where you are with your enterprise IT and your mail and your web services. Where are they now? So if you already have an outsourced solution for web services, then you can kind of cross that off the list. You don't have to worry about that. That might not give you the greatest bang for the buck. So I think you're looking for where do I get the greatest bang for the buck based on where I am right now.
And money's driving everything.
I think so. I think that's the most important. I mean, other than I gotta first create that core infrastructure that's supportive. So that probably drives everything else. I got to have that first.
And then the money concern, I hate the term more with less, I have to confess, because it seems to me really counterintuitive in an environment where agencies are really being called on. It just doesn't seem like a realistic expectation. Is that still the approach that agencies are bringing to you, or is there are we starting to see maybe a little bit of an expectation of, hey, I'm just not going to be able to do everything, and so I need you to help me figure out how to focus on my core responsibilities, my core missions?
I don't see people backing away from their missions. And while the concept of more versus less is a little bit counterintuitive, it depending on where you are right now, you may actually be able to achieve that with some of the modern technologies, especially virtualization, which is kind of the underlying technology and how you achieve efficiency in a cloud environment. You can call it cloud or you can call it a lot of different things, but really the idea of virtualizing where you can put many different logical domains on a compressed number of physical assets, that really does allow you to create that operating leverage and do more with less.
A number of folks have said that the name cloud has been the biggest setback to efficient deployment of the technology over the years because it sounds so ethereal and spacey and just kind of out there. It's, oh, that must be weird because it's got a weird name. Is that apprehension going away finally after a couple of years? Do people really get it now?
I think it is. I think people are understanding, and, you know, if somebody who's not a technologist like me, because I'm not, if I can understand the basic underlying technology, I think a lot of people can. What I think is interesting in the whole discussion about cloud, though, is really first understanding the underlying technology, and then there's kind of some business model issues that overlay what you adopt and how you adopt it. And I think those business model issues come to how much control do I want to have over my assets, and what's the level of service, manpower service, that I want to provide to my user community. And they, I think those business model questions really are important in deciding what you do and how you do it and what order you do it.
Are those issues different for everybody, and are they based on, do people analyze them, I guess I should say, more on the operations of the organization or on personal preferences?
I think the operations of the organizations drive that analysis. And if there's a, if you hear or see about agencies being reluctant to adopt, let's say, a public cloud model, I think they're, it's not because they don't prefer it, it's because their operational imperatives give them that reluctance with good reason.
Because my sense of the move to cloud in the first place was based, my sense was that a lot of the reluctance was based on personal preference. I just like to be able to go and put my hands on my organization's equipment whenever I want to, and I don't want to cede that its control. But a lot of it, I think, was based on personal preference rather than a business case analysis. It sounds like we're beyond that in your view.
Well,
is that fair?
Here's a question that I would ask, you know, that to really get to the heart of it is this. So electricity is delivered as a service. It's delivered from the cloud. So if you turn on the switch and the lights go on, that's terrific, and everybody's happy. But if you turn on the switch and the lights don't go on, what's your ability to control recovery from that position? If you're in an as-a-service environment, it might be to make a phone call and wait your turn in the queue. For a lot of customer missions and operational priorities, that's unacceptable. They need an ability to affect when their service is going to be restored. And if you go strictly to as-a-service environment, you may lose that. Now, you might counter that by saying, well, I can put in contractual provisions and I can put in penalties. Yeah, sure, but that's all after the fact. I don't have the ability right now, this minute, to do something to get my service back right now, this minute. And that's what's scary, I think, to people.
Well, especially when we saw some of the issues that cloud providers had during the last storm, the redundancies that people thought were there didn't seem to be there. And you're right, all of those things, you can write whatever you want in a contract, and there are times where somebody just can't deliver it, and you're still stuck in that same situation that you thought you weren't going to be.
Right. And that's not to say that if you can control the assets and you have control, you're going to get the immediate results you're looking for. But as an IT manager, it's certainly going to make you feel a lot better that you are doing something proactive and not just sitting waiting for it to come back up.
So you talk about the as a service issue, and one of the things that I hear time and time again from the agency people is my acquisition shop isn't equipped to buy that way very well yet. We'll talk about that. I'd like to, at least when we come back on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Larry Besterman of TWD and Associates, my guest on Industry Chatter today. We'll be back in a moment.
This is John Gilroy from Federal Tech Talk. You know, I've done over 260 interviews here on Federal News Radio, but many listeners still ask, what does your company do, John? My company is called Armature. For the past decade, we have worked with organizations that have programs for conformity assessment, accreditation, standards, and policy management. Is your agency responsible for conformity assessment? If so, then please visit our website, armaturecorp.com. We can help.
I'm on a mission to spread the word about COPD through music. COPD stands for chronic obstructive pulmonary disease. My grandfather suffered from symptoms of it, and COPD is the fourth leading cause of death in the U.S. I'm Billy Ray Cyrus, and I drive for COPD. Looks like people are starting to get the message.
Anyone age 35 and older who has smoked as little as 100 cigarettes could be at risk. Visit driveforcopd.com today and talk to your doctor.
Hi, everybody. It's David and Nikki Nellis for Foodie and the Beast, the D.C. area's one and only food and wine variety show. Tune in next Sunday and every Sunday at 11 right here on 1500 and 820 a.m. to hear the latest from the food and wine scene. We've got celebrity chefs, sommeliers, winemakers, and more all here to tell you about the inside skinny that you won't find anywhere else. That's Foodie and the Beast this Sunday at 11.
Hi, this is O'Donna Matthews. What does three decades of service add up to? For the Capital Area Food Bank, it includes these important numbers. Distributing 25 million pounds of food to nearly 500,000 people through a network of 700 partner agencies. 30 years, it's a long time. But the mission continues to make sure that no one is left hungry. To learn more, contribute, or volunteer, visit CapitalAreaFoodBank.org.
I'm Linda Carr, President and CEO of Advanced Alliance Solutions Team, AAST, a joint venture of small businesses dedicated to providing the federal government with exceptional services under the GSA Alliance Small Business Contract. Our goal is to team with small, medium, and large IT companies to deliver needed services to the federal government.
Please contact them at advancedalliant.com for potential small business teaming opportunities. That's advancedalliant.com.
Life with asthma. From the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, I'm Nicholas Garlow with HHS HealthBeat. Asthma makes it hard to breathe. It's a chronic disease that narrows the airways to your lungs, making it difficult to get air in and out. It can begin as early as childhood. You may often hear about asthma attacks. Dr. James Kiley at the National Institutes of Health explains.
People are reacting to agents, allergens that lead to this narrowing of the airway, the inflammation, the swelling that occurs. Then it gets very difficult to move air in and out.
There's no cure for asthma, but it can be treated effectively if you do the right things.
Use the medicines as prescribed. Make sure that you use it. Don't walk in to places where there's heavy tobacco smoke or allergens or things like that when you know that's going to trip off your asthma. And schedule regular asthma visits with your physician.
Learn more at healthfinder.gov. HHS HealthBeat is a production of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. I'm Nicholas Garlow.
When every moment matters and a hand reaches out, when someone gives blood and a life is saved, that moment when heartbreak turns to hope, you're there through the American Red Cross. Every day, the Red Cross responds to nearly 200 neighborhood emergencies, and your support makes it possible. Use this moment to join us today. Visit redcross.org.
Did you know Federal News Radio can also be heard on 820 AM in Frederick, Maryland? Check it out the next time you head to Fort Detrick or the I-270 Technology Corridor. Tune in to Federal News Radio for the latest news and information about the federal government and the federal contracting world. Federal News Radio, 1500 AM or 820 AM in Frederick, Maryland. Federal News Radio, your source for federal news now.
You're listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Industry chatter today with Larry Besterman of TWD and Associates. We talked about the concept of buying by subscription or as a service or whatever you want to call it, Larry. How well are the IT shops who want to buy that way and the acquisition shops who are not used to buying that way, how well are they synced up or how well are they getting at being synced up to be able to each work with the other in the way that they need to do this efficiently?
Well, first, I think GSA is taking a leading role in all of this, and they've already put in place some contracts that simplify buying as a service. Secondly, I think it is an adjustment process, and acquisition shops have to teach themselves or learn from each other, you know, how do I go about doing this? And I have to look at, you know, somebody else who's broken ground. I got to take their solicitation and see how I can adapt it to my situation.
Are agencies getting better at being willing to do that? I mean, for a long time, it seemed like they didn't even really want to get into the other guy's lane. They wanted to create everything on their own. Are you seeing more people who are willing to go, oh, that looks pretty good, I'll just steal that and make it my own?
I think there is more collaboration in that way. I do see that, and I hear customers talking about collaborating with closely associated agencies on not only what they're doing operationally IT-wise, but how they went about buying it.
I sensed frustration in industry for a long time at the maybe unwillingness of agencies to recognize, well, they did just what we're going to do, and we can do it the same way. There's no peculiar requirements for our mission or anything like that. I mean, you certainly understand where those things exist. You have to take a different approach. But it does seem like there are more people willing to not copy. That's maybe overstating it. But
right. But
willing to just look at what somebody else is doing and go down a similar road.
I think that concept is becoming more prevalent as good management best practice, and you see it applied in a lot of different ways in a lot of different places. So I think there's a maturing of the idea of buying stuff which is a procurement activity into managing programs, which, you know, really you look at NASA and DOD, and they're the pioneers about creating programs and managing programs. And I think a lot of that expertise is filtering out into the rest of the government so that they're not just buying stuff, they're managing programs. And that's the approach you have to take. And then when you have programs, you have that collaboration among the technical people and the acquisition people and people who've moved around from one agency to another, and that learning transfers, and I think that's how you get there.
Now, in that vein, two things I want to ask you about. First of all, the 25-point plan is what, like a year and a half old or so? Are you seeing a lot of those principles taking root at agencies? That was the intention, was this is going to be a framework and this is going to stick around for a while. Are you seeing that?
I can't say that I see that specifically, but, you know, conceptually I do see the adoption of best practices and the adoption of newer methods of buying things and managing things. Flowering all over the place.
The other one is Mythbusters, and that gets right to the collaboration issue that you've alluded to, not just agency to vendor back to agency, but also inside agencies. Are you seeing that start to take root too?
I think that's a little bit more of a challenge. I think there's still a lot of reluctance on the part of acquisition professionals to really engage with vendors. And I've heard government officials at conferences talking about the need to create a safe environment where the government and vendors can collaborate outside the acquisition process. Because once you get into the real acquisition process, you've got to be so careful about, you know, creating unfair advantage and creating a situation where you're going to get a protest, that people get very regimented. And if I can't talk to everybody at once, I'm not going to talk to anybody. So I think that's a challenge, to create that safe environment, that place where that collaboration between vendors and the government can occur.
I guess the good news is that until, it seems to me, maybe the last year or 18 months, even the conversations about the concepts of that weren't really happening. And at least now the conversation about the concepts and we should have this environment and these conversations should be happening way early on in the process, that stuff does seem to be relatively new and relatively well received. Is that a fair observation, do you think?
Yes, I think you have those, at least you have those discussions. I haven't I can't say that I've seen much in the way of pilot testing of that concept, but having that conversation is good. I think one of the challenges is there is a high level of mistrust between the government and the contracting community in a lot of areas, and frankly and unfortunately we in industry have exacerbated that a little bit because we've become so aggressive about getting contracts and winning, and we need them for our business models and our survival. We protest everything. I mean, that's a tough situation for the government to react to. And they may not react optimally in the context of collaborative acquisition, but they're reacting the way you'd expect somebody to react when they're getting all these protest darts thrown at them. So you can understand why it's happening. So the question is, how do we both get out of this cycle? Because this is not a good cycle to be in.
And do you have thoughts about that, or is that still the big existential question that's just really hard to answer?
I think that is a good existential question that's really hard to answer. I like the way of thinking about it that way.
A couple threads that I want to tie together when we come back. You mentioned at the beginning that you do a fair amount of business, your company does, at the state and local level. And we talked a little bit about the financial challenges that those levels of government are dealing with compared to what we're seeing in the federal government. I note from your biography that you were TWD's chief financial officer before you became the CEO. And so with that kind of a background, I'm wondering if we might be able to kind of tie some of those issues together when we continue our conversation. My guest is Larry Besterman. He is president and chief executive officer of TWD and Associates. My guest for Industry Chatter on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. We'll continue in just a moment.
Governments at all levels are operating in an era of fiscal austerity. Though revenues may be falling, the demand for critical services continue. Join host Michael Keegan as he welcomes Seth Diamond, Commissioner of New York City Department of Homeless Services, as they discuss New York's response to the challenge of homelessness. That's next week on the Business of Government Hour.
Soon this little baby I'm singing to sleep will start to walk. Before I know it, I'll be dropping her off at school, beaming when she walks up to accept her diploma, or holding back tears as she takes those big steps down the aisle. But before she takes all those steps, she and thousands like her will need you to take yours. Join March for Babies to help make her steps possible.
March for Babies!
Start your team today at marchforbabies.org.
Time is running out. Congress has until September 30th to pass agency spending bills for 2013. What's the latest on your agency's funding? How much will your budget be cut? And how will sequestration play a role? FederalNewsRadio.com's budget tracker has the latest on the 12 annual appropriations bills. Follow your agency's funding as it makes its way through the House and Senate and to President Obama's desk. Find the budget tracker online at FederalNewsRadio.com. Search budget tracker.
Newsmakers on the Federal Drive.
Pat Poynter, Deputy Comptroller for HR in the Office of the Comptroller of the Currency, and she's one of this year's winners of Federal News Radio's Causey Awards.
So many of our employees have only been at the OCC. They have been there for 20 and 25 and 30 years. To me, that speaks volumes of the agency. It was the leadership of the agency that so inspired me, that really attracted me.
Hear the entire interview online, federalnewsradio.com/Federal Drive.
This is In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Larry Besterman of TWD and Associates, my guest on Industry Chatter today. And I mentioned the convergence of some of the issues that you're dealing with, your financial background, the fact that your company has worked at the state and local level in the past, and you've had clients at that level that are dealing with tremendous pressures, much more so than anything we've seen so far in the federal government. What kind of advantage or head start or whatever do you think that gives you in understanding what an agency is dealing with considering the financial pressure that they're all under at this point?
Our managers have to be attuned to the budget process and how that ties to our task orders and the periods of performance of the task orders. And we counsel them to work with their customers to align their funding and their task orders to bridge potential gaps. And some of our customers are really adept at it. And when we go into continuing resolution mode or no budget mode, we amazingly enough have some active contracts with funding already obligated on them. So I think my experience coming out of the budget and finance arena when I worked on contracts and being CFO helps me attune them to those particular problems so that they can work with their customers on how to get their funding lined up and match up to periods of performance. And it doesn't always work. We still have a lot of situations where the task order is aligned with the first of the fiscal year. So we have gaps, and we have to manage those gaps.
I'm not sure there's any way to avoid that, given the CR environment we've been in for the last, seems like decade or so. But right. And looks like we're headed that same way again this year. When you think about that, and I don't expect you to give up any secrets here, of course, but how do you plan for that? How do you, as a company, as a leader of a company, how do you sit here today, on July 26th, and think, you know, come October 1st, for this or that or whatever on some of my line items, there might be a big zero there. These things, you can't magically make all of your contracts end September 30th. It'd be nice if you could, I suppose.
Right. It's very difficult. Actually, it's very difficult to plan for because, you know, if you don't have the funding and the task order period performance aligned correctly and you run into that gap, you very much are in a follow mode from the customer's guidance. And typically, as you get very close to that event happening, then the customer will get guidance from the contracting officer or from their comptroller, and it's very much a reactionary kind of situation. But we work pretty hard to insulate our employees from that. You know, the company maintains sufficient financial liquidity so that we can work through those periods of time. And keep people working, and unless the government tells us to stop, we continue to work, and we work through those gaps, and contracting officers are good about helping us through those periods.
You talk about agencies getting close to a situation and dealing with that situation, then that's kind of a microcosm of what I see, especially what I see in the IT shops at agencies and the feedback that I get from the leaders of those organizations. I am working so hard on the 50,000 things that are right in front of me today that I don't have time to step back and really do long-term thinking or strategizing or planning the way that I would like to. If you were going to sit down with me, and I'm a leader at one of those kinds of organizations, and I would say, Larry, what should be on my radar screen in the next 12 months or 2 years or 5 years? What kind of things should I be thinking about, maybe not even preparing for yet, but just so that when things happen, I'm not surprised by them? What are a couple of the things that you would tell somebody in that situation?
Well, you have to address mobility and the whole bring your own device phenomena, and you have to at least be thinking about how you're going to incorporate those technologies, because as we were talking about before, being a generational imperative, that's the workforce you have, and that's the workforce you have to support, and you have to be able to provide those capabilities. And so that, I think, goes to the top of the list. And if that should drive a whole bunch of subordinate decisions and plans to, if I got to get to that, then what are the steps to get me there?
The mobility issue is interesting to me because there still is such a tremendously wide spectrum of at least personal thought, maybe not agency policy, but personal thought about the feasibility of bring your own device. I still hear from people who tell me off the record, I don't think this is going to work. I'm not sure this is really such a good idea. And then there are other folks who are willing to say on or off the record, this is great and I can't wait to do it. And we're really moving toward that.
We see more of that, the latter than the former. Mm-hmm. We see at least pilot projects starting and interest in, you know, in a small sort of way, how do we figure out how to do this? We know it's a reality and it's a good thing. And how do we adopt it?
I mentioned that to somebody not too long ago who this person reminded me that, yeah, there were people who couldn't figure out why anybody would ever use email. So there's always been somebody at each one of these technological turning points throughout history to say, nah, we don't need this, and shake their fists and yell at the kids on their lawn, that kind of mentality.
Yeah, I think that cultural challenge has always been there. And I think it brings up a really good point that the change management and the cultural aspect of technology introduction typically doesn't get enough attention. So on that list we were talking about what to be thinking about, that's probably the second thing.
Well, let's explore that a little bit to wrap up when we come back, Larry, on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Larry Besterman of TWD and Associates, my guest for Industry Chatter today, and we'll wrap up our conversation next.
Are you a loyal credit card user and your only reward is a high interest rate? Anyone can join State Department Federal Credit Union and take advantage of their Visa Platinum credit card. Just 6.99% APR and no foreign transaction or balance transfer fees. Visit sdfcu.org today. SDFCU is federally insured by NCUA.
The men and women of our National Guard and Reserve Forces are working hard on the battlefield and here at home. Employer support of the Guard and Reserve is working just as hard for them. For over 36 years, ESGR has paved the way for greater understanding between our Guard and Reserve Forces and their civilian employers, promoting a culture where all American employers support and honor the military service of their employees. Together, we all serve. To learn more, visit www.esgr.mil.
To win and deliver government health care contracts successfully, you need to align with the right teaming partners. Moreover, with over 900 health care IT initiatives proposed in the 2013 federal budget, you need to begin building your health care IT teams now. Meet Tech Systems. Every year, Tech Systems deploys thousands of IT professionals at over 5,500 client sites nationwide, including more than 65 government agencies. Tech Systems Government Services offers a dedicated healthcare division to deliver practical healthcare IT solutions to the federal, state, and local government. No matter where you are on your meaningful use journey, Tech Systems can guide you through the transition, from providing managed services that tailor end-user training by role and workflow, to providing BI solutions that get you closer to your quality care goals. Tech Systems, our people make IT possible. Learn more at techsystems.com, TEKSystems.com.
There are those who dedicate themselves to a sense of honor, to a life of courage, and a commitment to something greater than themselves. They have always defended this nation and each other. They still do. The few, the proud,
so, guess what I just heard?
You mean about the Roth TSP?
Okay, yeah. Well, also
that bid protest on the DOD contract.
Right. But did you know
who the Senate confirmed for the administrator's job?
Well, what about
OMB's digital strategy?
Jeez, how do you know everything that's going on in the federal government?
I know because I signed up for Federal News Radio's email alerts.
Be in the know and know it first with Federal News Radio's email alerts. Sign up today at federalnewsradio.com. Search email alerts.
This is Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. It's In Depth with Francis Rose. My conversation with Larry Besterman of TWD and Associates. Change management is a cultural thing more than a technological thing. Is that fair to say, Larry? We talked about that in the last break.
Yes, absolutely it is.
The idea of preparing your team, preparing your organization for what is coming is it fair to say that's often as difficult or more difficult than the actual implementation of whatever it is that you're changing to?
I think it's very fair to say, and here's the challenge. The challenge is you've implemented business processes and practices based on the previous generation of technology. And as you incorporate new technology and capabilities, you have to optimize those business practices and processes to the new technology. Well, your technology vendor isn't going to do that for you. You have to figure out how to do that yourself. And that's a whole separate effort and a whole separate challenge.
So the technology comes in. Technology may work great. And the adaption, not the adoption, but the adaption may be problematic and may not help. Because of that, you might not achieve what you're trying to achieve.
And what may happen, which is a really suboptimal result, is I may try to continue to do things the old way with the new technology.
Yeah, we've seen that any number of times in government. Last question, Larry. When you look at where government is today and you look at where it could be 2 to 5 years out, that longer-term window that we looked at, what are the steps that you think agencies should be at least contemplating to get to that? It's impossible to predict the technology, but the conceptual steps, what do you think will be the good markers that we can look for?
I think a truly converged environment which incorporates mobility, those technologies are out there for a reason. They're out there because they work, and you have to figure out a technology roadmap that says, here's where I am, and here's how I, in an evolutionary sort of way, add new technology and the applications, and then work in the change management piece of that, and that lays out your roadmap for you.
And my sense is that kind of templates for those roadmaps exist, so it is even a leader's responsibility just to kind of choose one and adapt it to his or her organization. Is that right?
Yeah, I think that's right, and you have to do that in the way that makes sense for your organization, and that might make it slower or that might accelerate it.
Larry, it's a terrific conversation. I appreciate you being here today. Thanks for your time.
It was a lot of fun. Thank you.
Larry Besterman is president and CEO of TWD and Associates. You can hear my conversation with him posted later this afternoon at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. Hour number 2 of In Depth with Francis Rose coming in a moment on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.